Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and we are now chasing down Palace in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, last Saturday's 2-0 win over Leeds saw to it that barring snookers, we'll be spending a record fifth season in the top flight. Later on, we'll be joined by Joe Hunter from Piglet's Pantry. But first, we're going to be catching up with the second part of our interview with Gordon Greer, Adam Allad, Elliot Bennett and Gary Dicker. And we start part two without asking Gary Dicker, was watching the Amex being built an inspiration for that season?
I don't think we needed the motivation. As I said, it was we already had that in the dressing room. I think from the manager and from everyone, because I don't think anyone expected us to be up there. And it was that, I always felt we had that siege mentality, you know, us against everyone. And we had such a good dressing room. And touching on Charlie as well, I think Chaz was brilliant. I think he was good. They brought him in because they probably understood they weren't the happiest if we didn't win a game or we didn't play well. And they had Chaz was a good buffer in there. And I remember he used to come down the other day and say, oh, them two South Americans are doing me head in. And just stuff like that. And just lighting up the mood, you know what I mean? Sometimes, and he'd join in the crack and having a laugh at the lads. But he was good as well, Chaz. He knew when to get serious and he knew how much it meant to the club. But I don't think it drove us on. As Gordon said, we didn't realise. But then we obviously done a few tours during the season. If you can remember, we went over and went around and we're starting to see it. And then it was a bit like, I think we were so focused and had that tunnel vision that I think you need to be successful. I think if you start looking outside the box at different things and what might happen, I think we were just set on winning the league. And I remember Gus and Tano always saying, even Chaz and Gord would say, like, we wanted to win the league. We didn't want to get promoted coming second or we didn't want to go to the playoffs. We wanted to be the best team in the league. And having that in the background, yeah, it was nice, but I'll always touch on it. The focus we had and the drive and the hunger in the dressing room, I think, from the manager down to the players and staff was the best that I've had, and everyone in the same way. And I remember Gus touching on it and saying, like, the best dressing room we had, because whether you're in the team or weren't in the team, if we scored a goal, I think if you look at it, you'll see the bench. Everyone was involved all the time. We've all been there. We've been on the bench and you're not happy, but we had such a good team spirit and drive that everyone wanted the same goal. And I wasn't surprised that we ended up winning the league, to be fair. But yeah, it was a nice distraction, but I didn't personally think about it till closer.
Sure. I was watching the 15 years DVD last night, and of that particular
you
that
old
season.
Sentimental fool, you.
But I was watching that last night, and Gus was saying that after the Peterborough game is when he realised that this side was playing the football that I want them to play, and this is the best I've ever had. And it was after that Charlton game, they started to believing that we could win the league.
Well, there's that, but also what you have to then bear in mind is that with the Charlton marker game that Adam was talking about there, at the beginning of the new year, after a sort of like a slightly bumpy run, we had a reasonable cup run that year. I think we got to the fifth round, I think it was, and played Stoke City away. And we had a good time, but I think that what really sort of set the cat amongst the pigeons was March, you know, that calendar month of March where it wasn't necessarily the best games, but dear God, did we hit the afterburners on the table?
Yeah, I mean, it was
straight wins.
It was named Mad March. It was 8 games in 29 days. That is mad.
That is mad. Do you guys ever remember sort of the notion of the fact it was 24 and 24, or was it just the case of, right, we've got another game in 3 days' time? I mean, was it because they were coming thick and fast at you, weren't they?
I remember two of the games, I don't know if you remember them, it was Yeovil away and Dagenham away, and they were the worst games I've been involved in.
Weren't great.
The pitch at Dagenham was like a car park. Down in Yeovil, it was horrible journey. The hotel we stayed in was brutal. But I think we won both games 1-0. And it was because I remember them talking about it, saying, oh, this is the month everyone wants us to. This is where everyone thinks we're going to mess up, we're going to trip up. So I'm putting pressure on. And I think the lads would agree to go and win eight games anytime. They win eight in a month, and they were difficult games at that stage of the season. I think it just summed up that season. I think that was the mentality we had going into every game.
I actually spoke to a couple of Southampton players at the end of the season. We had like a season's award thing, and a few of the Southampton players were there, and we're just chatting away. And but they commented how, like, as Dixie said in the press, it was like they've not got the squad to like cope with eight games in a month. Like, they're going to start to lose some of their better players, and they're going to fill it with lesser players, and they're going to slip up. And Gus and Tano used to always say, like, every game, how did Southampton feel coming in after the game? How did Brighton get on? They've won again. And it must have been demoralising for them. Like, after every game, they're winning, they're keeping the pressure on us, and we just kept winning and winning and winning. And as Dixie said, some of the games weren't pretty, but we had such a winning mentality. That's the only way I can describe it. We were there and we were going to win. That Dagenham game was one of the worst games I've ever been part of in my whole life. The pitch was so bad that I just remember feeling like, I do not want to be here, but we went out and we got the win, thankfully.
Okay, sorry, I mean, let's talk about the other month. What else was there during that month? I mean, you mentioned two games we didn't play particularly brilliant. Let me throw in a third, Brentford away. A missed penalty, and then we win by the mossiest of own goals. You know, such are the fine lines which define champions, I guess.
That, do you know what, March, I think I got injured at Sheffield Wednesday, or was it one of the games I pulled my hamstring, and I missed a few games in March. I don't know whether I played. I think I played the open away. I don't think I played Dagenham. Missed Dagenham.
That was a good one to miss, mate.
Good one to miss. I heard that. But the boys did say that. It's the worst game of football.
The game I want to talk about is the one that was on the 5th of March, which was, it showed how resolute the squad was and how determined you were to get over the line. And that was the game at home to Carlisle. And just to paraphrase Johnny Cantor, it's the stuff of champions. It's the stuff of dreams.
Dixie, I think this is what you were talking about earlier. You were talking about Liam Bridcutt's last minute gasp winner.
Yeah, I think that was the day we knew we were literally going to, for me, win the league, because they're the games that we obviously weren't great that day. I think we took the lead a few times and they just kept on scoring. I remember Harry Arthur scored a worldie that day. He was on loan there. I remember playing against them, and then I remember Limo scoring that day, and it was one of them crazy days. And it was, I think that whole month was, we had games where, as Gord said, everyone was expecting us to slip up and not win every game, and think injuries or fatigue. It was Saturday, Tuesday for the whole month, which is tough. And them few games, yeah, they stick out, because that's a sign of a good team, really, when you're not playing the best and you're still getting results, and we were still digging it out and getting over the line. But now that day, I remember just when Limo hit his volley, it was an unbelievable goal.
Just to put it into terms, like they equalised, it was Arthur equalised in the 92nd minute to make it 3-3, and then Liam scored in the 93rd minute to make it 4-3. That's the stuff of dreams.
When you've got something like that, where, I mean, the ball was just bouncing around. Even then, I'm talking about Liam's goal here, where the ball is bouncing around, just it's a mess, and it's almost as if they could almost sort of, if a Brighton player could, he'd pick it up and throw it into it and say, look, there's our goal, there's our win, that's what we're here for, you know. And to my mind, and I'm going to put this out on air, I still think the Bridcutt shanked it.
Nah, not for me. It was his left foot. I'm sure it went straight in. It was one of them where you don't know where it's going as a footballer. You're just wanting to connect with it and hit it. I just remember it flying in, and it was, yeah, we all ran over to the far corner.
I mean, from a fan's point of view, I mean, bearing in mind that Carlisle had just equalised, you're just shocked and you're a little bit disappointed, but knowing full well they played a really good game. But the thing is, we were on that cusp. And I'm just going to give it to you guys from a fan's point of view, you know, with 10 years hindsight, of my thing at the time. It was just, I was almost so drained. I wouldn't say I forgot to cheer. I was just, my God, what is it about this football club? We just keep going and going. I mean, you guys went absolutely loopy on the pitch. Everyone around me, there was just limbs. I was just standing there, stock still, saying, WTF has just happened here. And I think probably that's just the nature of football and what it can provide. But that was one of those moments. And it is, you know, sort of writ large in the annals of Albion history. This was one of those moments. And there were several in that season when you think, God, what it is to support this team. But I've got to put it to you, what it is for you to play in that team in that season.
See, to be honest with you, that sort of thing sums up the sort of feeling. If you speak to any of the players for that season, I bet they'll be very positive on the dressing room, positive on the lads. Everybody got on well. We had a great team spirit. But that game sort of sums up what it was like to play for us that season. It was full of ups and downs, but we knew we were always in a game. We never say die attitude. And Limo stuck that one away, which was amazing because he never scored a lot of goals either. So for him to pop up late in the game and get that goal, I was delighted for him. He was a brilliant player for us, brilliant player.
It didn't really work out for him. It worked for him under Gus at Brighton, but didn't work out for him anywhere else. I mean, was that because of the style of the people that you had around him, do you think?
I think from my point of view, I used to love playing with Liam because he always gave his angles. Adzo definitely backed me up on this. Dixie was ahead of Liam, and with the way we rotated in the midfield, Liam would always come and help the centre-backs out, get on the ball, and he tried to play forward. But what really impressed me about him was what he'd done against the ball. So he was like sort of, when the fullbacks would go forward, he filled in gaps where they would leave, which goes unnoticed at times with supporters. But he was a brilliant wee player, and I thought he was great. And I think just Gus and the way that we played was just perfect for him. I think, to be honest with you, it was perfect for me as well.
I don't think it did go unnoticed. I mean, he won player of the season twice, which is unheard of. I mean, I think it's only Bobby Zamora who's won it twice.
There's about three or four others that have done it, but I think he was the most recent one to have won it twice. So, and that was after we got to the Amex. But Adam, if you can hear me this time, you know, can you back up Gordon's point about Liam's, you know, work up when you working alongside Liam?
Yeah, Liam was a dream to play with. Like Gord said, when the full quest went forward, he'd be like you just unleash the hound, because he'd just go out into wide areas and address the ball 1v1. Probably the best 1v1 defender we had. He's just like a little pit bull, like strong, low centre of gravity. When anyone knocked it, he was quick. So not only the fact that he made angles and was brilliant on the ball and very rarely gave it away, defensively, he was our insurance. You know, he was centre-half dream, really, because not only that, he can head the ball as well. So if the ball's landing short, he can also jump and head it. You know, he was a good player, a really good player.
Sure.
A proper little terrier as well, wasn't he? I mean, he's
just a pit bull. Yeah.
Like break it up and keep it simple.
Let's move it forward then from that game. Because like I say, we've done March and we got to the end of March. And then once April turned up, we stopped winning, or rather we didn't win at Rochdale. That was a bloody good game, that was. I think, didn't you score, Gary?
I remember we conceded a free kick that day. Was it Kishy Chef gave away a free kick, or he'd done something on the wall, or something happened that day? I remember it was chaos after the game. But even Kishy Chef that year, Limo was brilliant. I think Limo probably didn't get... I think he was a better athlete that people actually knew he was, and technically. And he came in that season where he couldn't find the club as well. But we brought Kishy Chef in as well, and he was a great guy. He was chilled out, I think the lads would say. He used to tell me he used to go home and have a whiskey and a cigar most days. So he came in, and he was great as well. You know, he'd played in the Premier League for years in that Charlton team, and international, played at Euro. I'm sure he played at Euro 96 as well. So we had players like that. But yeah, going into the last part of the season, I think that's when we got wind. We were going to Marbella, so I think we kind of chilled out a bit near the end of the season.
So okay, but let's move on. Just as Elliot Bennett is about to join us, he always turns up late and grabs the glory. We're getting to that, then we've got. I think there's probably two games we want to talk about. And they were the ones that kind of crowned the season. And I think that everyone was so excited about the home game. You're talking about Dagenham Redbridge away, which was a minger of a game. But the one down here, a beautiful, balmy April evening. You could feel, I mean, again, from a fan's point of view, you could feel the buzz in the air. You could feel something special happening. You could feel almost like a Hollywood script being written out here as that, you know, we leave our last year of homelessness, our last month of homelessness in order to go to our great new edifice. And here we are on the cusp of it. And then we concede in the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, that was a mental game. Was that 4-3 that game?
It was 4-3 as well.
Yeah, it was 4-3, yeah.
It was carnage that game. It was another one that they, the management would have went nuts that night as well because they hated it. They used to call it basketball, didn't they? And we had the odd game like that. And it was just, yeah, it was a strange night. Obviously, it was a big night for the club. And them games are usually harder than against the bigger teams. And they went ahead early doors. It was a deflection, I'm sure it hit half ads and went in.
I remember that game. I remember that game well because I honestly, it was like I've been space jammed. Like, forgot how to play football, literally. I think I gave away a penalty. Big John Akinde ran me and I slid in, which is something that is golden rule under Gus. Don't tackle in the box. And then, there was another deflection, honestly, man. It was one of them. It was so unlike us that night.
Yeah.
I think it was the nerves of obviously getting over the line, but yeah, it was a crazy game.
As I recall it, we went 1-0 down, then started playing really well, went 2-1 up, and then started playing badly again, and Dagenham took it to 3-2. And from what I recall then, we went back to 4-3, and I think it was actually Barnes who came on and hit the winner. But again, Liam Bridcutt hit an absolute tracer of a shot. But once it got to 4-3, then I think you guys got to realise, okay, let's just calm it all down a little bit and let's have what we hold. Because, like I say, it was a mad, mad game of football. And I wouldn't say you looked nervous. You looked like kids in a sweet shop.
I never played that game. I remember feeling that game. I never played that game. I'm sure I never. I remember I watched it up on the terrace, you know, the wee terrace.
Oh.
It was like the game where we could get like officially be like promoted, if you like, of champions. And I just remember watching the game like, as you say, it was just a mad game.
Yeah.
Can I just do my Liam Bridcutt stat here?
Yes.
You know, Gordon, you were saying just now that Liam Bridcutt didn't score many games. There was only three games ever in which Liam Bridcutt scored, and all three games featured games that had seven goals. So there was the 2-4-3s, and he also scored an own goal for against Brighton for Liverpool.
That's
and
right.
I finished 6-1.
That game as well.
Yeah. Well, that was not my Bridcutt stat. Let's not go too far into that game because otherwise we'll end up crying and falling out. So
I mean, it was an absolutely terrific goal, and it's like it was just one of those games where there was a bit of moisture in the net when Brilliant hit that, and when as soon as it hit that top corner, you know, that place where the spiders live, and it's just an explosion of water, which is just one of the most beautiful sights in football. Oh, I love it, love it.
Absolutely. So we had that celebration.
We had a good night that night. I remember we went there.
Yeah, I know. You're a vodka refs, weren't you?
Yeah. Oh.
I remember Darren Bloom's card got raided that night, didn't it?
Yeah. I remember the next morning I woke up next to the bed. There was a big pool of sick, and I had my boxer dog, Chunk, literally, and I was cradling him. He was licking my face, literally. I was cuddling him like he was holding on for dear life.
I heard you woke up when you get up after seeing that sick. You went into your back pocket, you had Darren Bloom's credit card.
his card did get a paste in that night, to be fair.
I remember it well. I'm sure it was Spadge that gone behind the bar and just taking bottles of vodka, walking around, pouring everyone a drink.
And the other game that week, obviously, was away at Walsall. It was the one that clinched us the title. Gentlemen, what are your memories of that particular day?
For me, yeah, that was one of the great days. I think the away end was packed that day.
Yep.
And it was just one of them days. I think, I'm sure, obviously, Benno scored, Muzza scored. I can't remember who else scored that day.
Cowley got the first one.
Oh, the Cowley, yeah.
That was his eighth of the season. Just to rub it in.
I should have said him anyway. He's probably playing centre-forward again that day. But it was just one of them days. The away fans, it was sunny. Pitch was actually all right that day. And it was just everyone had a good feeling. And I don't know, we were just going in, whether it was that game or any game, just having that feeling that you know you're going to win. And I didn't have any doubts that day. I know we had games where we spoke, it was a few games that were 4-3, 3-2, but I think Gord's touch on it, and just know going into the games, you know your job. We knew if we played how we could play, I don't think anyone in that league could touch us. And I think that day it just clicked. And it was more so the fans that day that I remember, more so the game. It was rocking down in the far corner. And it was just one of them days that I think that you'll always remember. And then we had some great crack after it on the bus on the way back, everyone drinking and stuff like that. So it was more so for the fans that day. I know we won that day, but everyone had travelled. And it's one of them days you kind of wish you were in the away end as well. Everyone was obviously drinking and having a good time, and the sun was out, and we're going to be champions. So yeah. I think all the other stuff touched on it. And I think Nabs came on that day as well, and he'd been out injured for the whole year and stuff like that. And it was nice to have people like that, because he got a bad injury that year and he was part of the squad, and he came on that day. And it was a great day all around, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those days. I mean, driving up there, I mean, it was, I mean, we talk about cup finals and things like that, but I mean, the atmosphere as you're going up there, and you know, everyone's bibbing their horns and there's flags.
Did I drive you up there?
No, it was Phil, but you were with us,
right?
And It was just the atmosphere on the way up there. It was like, yeah, we already sealed promotion. Everyone was in a good mood already. And then there was the fake trophy presentation as well, the inflatable trophy, which Gordon held aloft with more aplomb than the actual real trophy.
To be honest, see what I was going to say. Let's see, for us as players, I don't know how I'm speaking for other people, but see, because we're so far ahead in the league. It was kind of like we were expecting it. It wasn't, for me anyway, it was like, we knew we were going to win the league. It was just a matter of time. So we're sort of just expecting it, but it was a great end to the season, and it was fully justified because we were going that season.
Was that the first thing you'd won as a player?
I think, to be honest with you, I'm sure it is. I gained promotion with Doncaster through the playoffs. I never played, but we'd gained promotion. But to win the cup, to win the league was amazing. I'm sure it is the only thing that I've ever won. And as I say, it was the season was great, and the last game of the season was perfect, because obviously it was all planned out and how we were going to celebrate, and the boys were buzzing, to be fair.
Now, Adam, obviously, we won the title with four games to spare. Does it? I mean, is there anything about it you think, well, yeah, it was a brilliant achievement, four games to go. You know, we're going into our new stadium, but at the time, 100 points were still available, and an absolute sort of whitewash of the rest of the division was still possible. How difficult was it to motivate yourselves into the rest of those games then? Because we picked up 2 points from the last four games. Admittedly, we had two very difficult games, Huddersfield and Southampton, to play, but was it quite difficult to motivate yourself in the way that you had been for the rest of the season?
Yeah, very. For me, I don't think I was the only one in saying that. I think it was a little bit, not an anti-climax, but it was kind of like the last four games were difficult to motivate yourself to train how we trained for the whole season. And I look back at it now, I think, why? It would have been great to go and get 100 points. But I think it's natural. You take your foot off the gas a little bit. We partied a little bit.
I'm sure we went to Marbella before the last game of the season, didn't we? Remember that?
Yeah.
Before the last game of the season.
Yeah. Second. Who would we play second last game of the season? I can't remember.
Rochdale last game of the season. 0-0.
No, the last. Well,
we played Ross County last game.
Ross County.
Did we play someone before that? Who did we play?
It was the last home game and the last ever game with Dean was at home to Huddersfield.
Yeah, it was the Huddersfield game. And I think, in fairness, we all wanted to get to 100 points. I remember speaking about, and sometimes maybe, I think we got beat against Huddersfield, where we should have beat them up there as well that season. We got beat. Musa missed a penalty up there as well, I remember, and they scored late on. And the just result, I'm sure we played Colchester on the telly as well. And one of them four last four games, was it? We drew one all, and there was games, and it was a bit sticky.
I'm now delighted to say we've been joined by Elliot Bennett.
Yeah.
Hello, Elliot.
Come in, steal the line.
Sorry, I'm late.
You just missed us talking about your goal at Walsall.
good one for me to miss, eh?
Oh, there he is.
Dixie Dean.
Adie, now that Benno's here, should we go to the pub?
Yeah, let's just leave him to it.
Sounds like
a good plan. Okay. So, Adam, that Huddersfield game was the last ever Albion game with Dean. It'd been a life raft. It'd been 12 long years there. The only place you could get sunstroke and pleurisy at the same time. But it was 12 happy years, mostly. A very successful time. And, I mean, a lot of people were very sad to leave it. Obviously, we were going to the Amex. But, I mean, to finish that, our tenancy there, with Gordon lifting the trophy, was magnificent, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a great way to end the great era, really. We had some good times, like you said. It was a great season. A little bit of an anti-climax with the way we ended it. I think there's four games at the end. We weren't at our best. And to be fair, Gus let us know. If it wasn't for the fact that we were lifting the trophy that day, I think he would have torn a few heads off, you know. But it was a great day. Like Gordon Gaz said, I think that's the first, the only actual trophy I've actually won, the title I've won. And like Gord, you know, so they don't come around often those days, you know. So it was special day.
We've won the trophy. We've all disappeared into the sunset, had our summer, but that was a summer which was certainly for us fans was, and those who'd actually been campaigning, was a real buzz. We were getting our new stadium finally. Now, I don't know if it ever translated into the players. So I'm going to ask each of you, Gary, Gordon and Adam, could you give us your take on the build-up to, you know, the first games being played at the Amex and what you felt of it, especially with that Doncaster game?
For me, I just wanted to be in the team. I think everyone kind of knew how important it was for the club, the supporters, the city. I think everyone, the build-up to it, I remember going into the pre-season and just thinking, I want to be involved that day. I want to be on the pitch. It was an absolute brutal game. We were terrible. I'm sure I was involved in giving away the ball and they broke and Biddy Sharp scored a crappy goal, bobbled into the goal, and it was one of them. You're thinking, oh, not today, seriously, not today. Gus got sent off. And then Bucks came on and scored two absolute worldies, to be fair. And then after that, it was just, the place went mental. I remember celebrating on the far end in the corner. And I think everyone had their families there. My family came over. I'm sure all the lads had their families there. And the build-up to it was, I think we obviously trained at the Amex and all before it. We used to do games there, getting used to the pitch, which was quite different and stuff like that. And as Gordon said, I don't think we all realised how good the ground was going to be. Whether it was the dressing rooms, it was the players' lounge, everything. It was state of the art. And to get the win that day, I think, summed up kind of the struggle that the club had gone through. And it was a struggle that day, and we got over the line. And I think it was massive for everyone. Just to get a winning start there, the first ever game there, and to be part of it, you're going to be part of history at the club. Mm. Obviously, Gordon leading out the team as well. No matter what you do in your career or where you are, we obviously won the league, but I think everyone's going to remember the first ever game there. And it's a great memory to look back on and to be part of and to be proud of even now. Even when I've got two kids, they're two girls, they've no interest in football. Even when we drive past the Amex and they're looking at it and you're saying, well, I was part of it. The team that played the first game there after all the years that they had no home, and it's great to look back on for me. I don't know about the other lads, but I'm sure they'll agree.
Seen the build up to the Amex move as well. I think obviously not being a Brighton supporter growing up, and you don't know much about the club until you move into the area. Like we got all the sort of history surrounding the club and the way that they shut down the goals in the move. They were in Gillingham, then we're at the Withdean. They're trying to get the new club. So we could feel the fight that the supporters were going through. So I felt like we were representing the fans that day. It wasn't about us. It was more about the club. This is a special day for everybody else. And we were sort of representing yous. So yeah. I really felt like a real responsibility when we're going out there. Like, listen, this means so much to... so much to the guys that the fans that are sort of stuck with the club through thick and thin, and ultimately no club's a club without the supporters. So it was a massive day for us, for all of us, like representing the town.
Now, Gordon, for you, I mean, like I said, I mean, I was watching this again last night, and for you as captain, leading out that side into that stadium that day with the flags waving and the sheer emotion. I mean, I mean, looking at that, you look quite emotional yourself.
No, honestly, as I said just there, like, we felt a responsibility to the supporters. You know, the supporters are fantastic at Brighton, and we had great support at the Withdean, albeit. You know, maximum capacity is maybe 8,000 supporters, but when we went to the Amex, and you appreciate the size of the club, we were filling out the stadium, but it was more about the struggle, you know, the struggle to get to that stage. And we were lucky, blessed to be able to walk out that day, because we represented the struggle that everybody else had been through to get to that stage. And it was a massive honour for me to lead the team, but I'm sure the lads will echo that it was a massive honour to be part of it.
Gordon, were you ever, I mean, you may not have ever been made aware of the significance of this, but were you aware the timing of the goals in the 83rd minute and the 97th minute in terms of the history of the Albion are massive?
No.
It's a reference to the fact that 83 and 97 were very much red letter days in the history of the Albion. 83, we got to the cup final. 97, we lost the goals. And I mean, there is that kind of romantic sort of symmetry that, you know, us soppy football fans come up with on a day like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, like, in the build-up to the first game, that's when it all sort of hit home for us. Well, for me personally, the fact that, you know, you learn a wee bit more about the history of the club. And obviously since that day, like, I'm sure all the lads will echo this as well, like, we've got like a real attachment to the club. And you know, we were part of something special, and it was an honour to be part of it.
Adam, as the boy, local boy, done good, what did it mean for you to actually, you know, wear the stripes for your side in this sort of magnificent new monument?
To be fair, I had to wait for my turn because I was injured for the start of that season. To break my foot back end of the season, that we won it. So I didn't actually play until the Burnley game, but sitting in the stand watching the boys, obviously I was disappointed enough to be playing, but it was a hair on the back of your neck moment, where massive moment for the whole city, you know. It took the club to a next level. I mean, Brighton's always been a big club in the past with 30,000 fans at the Goldstone week in, week out, but it really been through the mire, and it was back. The club was back, and the boys marked it in a brilliant way. Bucks's two goals were incredible, you know. And I don't think we played that great, but we got the win, and it set the tone really for that season, because it was a great season.
Now, Elliot, for you, I mean, I don't know how. I mean, for you, were the poster child when for the Amex season ticket sales. You were on the front cover of all the brochures that went out to all the supporters. And obviously you weren't there, but you must have been looking on in awe a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously it was incredible times, my time down there with the lads. Obviously we knew what we had to try and do to make sure that the club, you know, had a first season in the Amex and the Championship. And yeah, obviously I ended up moving on, and you know, it was a bit of a mix of emotions really, because I was getting my chance to go and play in the Premier League, but at the same time missing out on, you know, a kind of journey that I started with the lads in getting Brighton back into the Championship and playing in the new stadium. So yeah, it was obviously a great moment that the lads, I'm sure, I'll never forget, and I'm just glad that I was lucky enough to play in the same team as these boys and be part of the journey and getting to the Championship and obviously the first season at the Amex.
And moving on to now, guys. Obviously, we've been in the Premier League. Hopefully, we're looking to be there for a record fifth season, which we've never achieved before. When you look at where the club is now and to the club that you left, what are your thoughts on that? Starting with you, Gordon.
I'm fortunate enough still to be involved with the club, and obviously for us, the started at the with team to see the club progress in the way it has done. You know, it's credit to the chairman and the board here. I mean, the club's unbelievable. Like, I'm at the training ground right now, and the training ground's ever expanding. The facilities the lads have got are second to none, like state of the art. And you know, we were a part of that. We sort of put the foundations in place at the time to up for the club to get through into the championship, move into the new stadium, obviously move into the training ground. But it's a fantastic club, and I'm sure the lads will echo this, that, you know, after a Saturday afternoon or whatever, wherever you're at, you'll check out the Brighton results straight away and see how they're getting on, because we all want the best for them.
Yeah, and Gordon, obviously, I mean, being at the club previously and missing out on the playoffs of getting up to the Premier League a couple of times, I mean, do you think it might have been too early at the time, or was it the right time when we did go up?
No, I think it was right. I think it was actually, I feel it was too late, obviously. I don't know what you're talking about. Well, 2 years too late, that's why.
Yeah, just insult him, ain't you? Why don't you?
No, it was, no, to be fair, we were fortunate enough when we went into the championship that we're always competitive. And for me, I had three seasons where we got to the semi-final playoffs, where we were so close, but yet so far. And then obviously, the season after I left, the club managed to finally achieve the automatic promotion, which was coming. I genuinely do think it was coming for a couple of years, and it was much deserved. I think the squad of players that the club put together was always building, it was always improving. Yeah. And even now, with the club, you know, you look at the team and some of the performances they're putting on now, it's outstanding football. It's just they've adapted really well to their life in the Premier League, and we've got some fantastic players, and the club's doing really well.
Okay, Dixie?
Yeah, I agree with Gord there. I don't think it would have been ever too early, because I think the minute when the chairman came in, and obviously Gus came in, and that vision was there from day one, with how they ran the club, the money they put in, the stuff they done off the pitch, how they developed the club, the training ground, everything. It was the ambition and the drive and the desire to get there. Even when I left, you knew it was going to be a Premier League club. It didn't matter whether it was that season, the season after. Even when he went through a rocky spell, you always knew. And as Gord touched on it, I'm a Brighton fan since the day I left Brighton. And I always will be. Obviously, my family are down there and stuff, and I'll always look out for the results. But I think the club is always... The club is always going to get there. And I think it probably got there a little bit late, as Gordon said. We probably should have got there that year where we got beat off Palace in the playoff. We dropped some silly points. We probably could have got automatic that year. But no, it was always geared up. And to see it as it is now. And I think the next stage, I don't think they will settle for just being staying up. And it does take long. I know this season, as you said, could be the fifth season, but I don't think they're going to stand still and just accept that as a club. I don't think they ever have with the people who are in charge down there. I don't think they'll ever just accept doing all right. And for me, I think I said it before on podcast, I think how they're trying to play football and the way they're trying to play football, I think is a credit to them, because you look at the other teams down there. I know Fulham tried to play a bit, but it's just that it's a thin line in football. It could be a goal here or there, and the way they're trying to play, I think you're seeing with the players that they have, it suits the players they have. And maybe they do still need a bit of luck, the odd goal to go in. But for me, I love watching Brighton play. I've seen most of the games this year when they're on telly, and I've no doubt that they'll stay up.
And Dixie, as a Brighton fan, how did it feel when we beat Liverpool?
Yeah, obviously, I am a Liverpool fan, but no, obviously, delighted for a club, to be honest with you.
Who do you support, Celtic?
More clubs than Tiger Woods here.
Celtic?
No, definitely not Celtic. As I said, I think that just proves the way they are. I think that Liverpool team's probably one of the best in the Premier League in the last decade or so, and they've gone up there and they didn't just go up there and hold on the backs of the walls. I think the way they are, and they're trying to play up in the back, and they're playing football in the right way, and with the players they have, it suits, as I said, and hopefully they can get over the line this year, because I think they're good in the Premier League. They've got a good manager. I know Gord's part of the staff down there scouting, and they're a progressive club. They're always looking to do stuff good and thinking outside the box for certain things, and that's a credit to the club.
Wow, that was absolutely fantastic to hear from Gordon, Elliot, Adam and Gary there. I still cannot believe it's been 10 years out, and it was a happy time.
It was a happy time. It was, you know, the end of With Dean was a funny old time. You know, so as the boys said during the show, we crashed and burned at the end of the season there. But, you know, there's one thing that we didn't really talk about that is one of my favourite memories of that last day. And it still kind of chokes me up a little bit now. Was, do you remember as we walked down through the tunnel, the senior citizens retirement home, and they put out this big, I don't know what you call it, this blank.
Well, this banner, so this we'll banner miss saying, you. And, yeah. they'd all knitted like little seagulls and they put in the trees and stuff.
Yeah, good luck in your new stadium, we'll miss you. And I'm thinking, wow, this is in such 180-degree contrast to the nonsense that we had trying to get into With Dean 12 years earlier in the first place. So, you know, it shows we can be good neighbours. But, yeah, incredible times. You know, I wouldn't want to return to anything like that. Of course not. But, you know, it's kind of bittersweet in as much as, yeah, weird place. But, dear God, didn't we do well there?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And we are now delighted to be joined by Queen Piglet herself. It's Joe Hunter from Piglet's Pantry. So, Joe, welcome back. First things first, you must be delighted to be able to fill the Amex with the smell of your awesome savouries once more.
Hello and welcome back to you guys too. It's been a long while, a very long while. I think the last year feels about like 5 years in some instances, and certainly where the football's concerned, that's for sure. And yes, absolutely delighted. I've even got my tickets as well because I was in priority group one. So I'm raring to go on all counts, really, on my singing. I get my singing voice back into gear. And
yeah. Well, the thing is, Al, I mean, I've seen a few people moaning about the amount of tickets that have actually gone on sale. I mean, we've just been talking about With Dean there, and our average attendance with Dean, I looked it up, was 7,351, which is actually less than the amount of tickets are actually on sale for the Amex for this one game. So
yeah, but this time we've got a roof, so you know what the hell. It's gonna be brilliant to be back. I mean, it's what is it, about a third of the capacity, about a quarter of the capacity, but. As we've said on this show, when you go into the West Stand Upper, which is where I've got a ticket from, being in priority group three, but still managed to get my ticket. It's going to be good to see, hopefully, so many friends back in the West Stand Upper concourse. Really looking forward to it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be sitting closer than three seats, whatever it is, to the nearest person, which is probably more of a benefit for them than it is for me.
I would concur.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you? But yeah, it's going to be brilliant. But it is breaking yourself back into that culture of the pies and pints, the very thing that we started 10 years ago. And Joe was such a major, major part of that. And I've got to come back to you, Joe, because it has been nearly 10 years and we're celebrating with the 10 years and we had the boys on talking about their stuff. But for you, this time 10 years ago, did you know what was going to happen? Even for the rest of 2011.
This time 10 years ago, I was the first one. We were the first team to be cooking in the stadium, and we made, I think it was 1,500. I should have the notes on this. 1,500 pies, and we made them all by hand with a small team.
Where was this?
It was in the west, on the West End kitchens. So it was over in the West End, and we We had support, obviously, from the team on site and everything else. And I just remember, there's two things I remember really vividly about that kind of first match. One was the sheer goosebump feeling of seeing everybody crying and hugging and the flags waving and just the sheer euphoria. I don't think I've ever been in any situation before or since where it was so, I don't know, it's just so overwhelming, I suppose. So that was like number one, and just how much it meant to everybody that was there. And I think the second thing was running out of pies after 10 minutes. So those two are fairly, very, fairly vivid memories for me. Well, and I remember Martin Perry coming down saying, right, Mrs. Piglet, we need double the amount of pies, you know. Off well,
let's,
you go.
Let's take it back a few stories then, because, you know, I know that you've told me about how you got the gig, but for me, I think it's the stuff of a legend. So how did you get the gig in the first place?
Like everything, right time, right place, right conversation. You know, you ask the right questions and then be careful what you wish for. And so for me, it was Luke wanted several tickets in North Stand, my youngest.
Yep.
And he wanted to sit with his mates. And, you know, obviously that incurred me having to get my Amex card out and go up and pay for them all because they couldn't do it any other way. So I'm sure there was obviously some bits in between where I was the only parent available, I think. So I went up with him. I was a bit annoyed about this at the time. I was a bit like, really? But I went up and I bought his ticket for his 18th birthday. He was coming up for 18. And I was really blown away by the kind of presentation. And Richard Hebbard at the time was showing us around, talking about the stadium, how proud he was of it all and everything. And it was amazing. And I just remember saying to him, so community stadium, what does that mean? Does that mean you'll be using community support, you know, suppliers, etc.? How will that work? And he asked me politely what I did. And I said, oh, you know, we've just opened up a new bakery, literally to few weeks ago down in Shoreham. And he was like, ah, so food. He said, so do you make a good pie? And I was a bit like, slightly sort of like left ball. And I was like, yeah. My dad used to be a baker and used to make pies. So yeah, I know a few things about pies. So he said, well, if you can come up with some pies for the stadium, because the ones I had yesterday we threw in the bin, then the gig's yours, kind of thing, tongue in cheek. So I was a bit like, well, I've happily designed some pies for you. I'm sure we can do better than what you had, insert here the competitor that we won't mention. And and I was just, I think my horror, I was horrified actually. My look on my face must have said it all. I said, you know, the boys have marched up and down the seafront for this stadium along with everybody else. We can do better than that, and I'm sure we can come up with something better than that. And I was kind of like given the contact details for the catering manager at the time, Elliot Moore, and we got together on the Monday. And Elliot was happened to go to the same college as me, Pelham Street, so we had lots of old fond memories to talk about. And he told me his predicament of, you know, he wanted a good pie, but trying to meet the price points was tricky. And it kind of started from there, really. And we were, you know, going several rounds of pie offs. You know, I think at one point I was squeezing most of the management up with Dean and met Martin Perry and his dog several times up there. And became quite good friends at that point. You know, I think it was almost like, I think they just thought, oh yeah, this is just going to carry on doing this afterwards. So I think that's why I got the gig, really.
Yeah, because I remember you coming into a Friends of the Album network meeting and like with a load of pies for everyone in there to try. Because I think they knew they wanted to go with you, I think, but they wanted like to try a little against other people, and you were so nervous coming into that room. It was
flour on my cheek. Those are the days. Yeah, that's it.
Well,
I was nervous because, you know, it's our local club, you know, and it's a big deal, you know, supplying your local club, even 10 years later, it's a big thing for us. You know, we are part of the fabric. We're very fortunate to have a very good relationship, and it's been built over many years. And mostly thanks to the fans, really, because they have been very supportive of us and our product. And it goes kind of hand in hand with the Harveys. But I think Brighton were very forward thinking at the time. Nobody's ever really done what they did. And I think that's why it was so phenomenally successful. And I think that's why they're still successful now. I mean, we still sell out game, we sell 8,000, 9,000 products across the stadium still. I mean, that's a real testament to, you know, kind of building something special. And I think we built something very special that year. Yeah. And it's stayed with us ever since, which is great.
So, and in that time, Joe, from, well, even in the early years, but through to the 10 years that are now, Do you feel that the club has been supportive of you?
I think the club's always been supportive of us, and I think they've always wanted to keep that relationship going. I think the catering companies that we've had that have come and gone have not always been supportive, and that was always a little trickier. Certainly, we've got a very good relationship with Sodexo now, and we have had for the last few years. We've built that over time. But I think it's you have two relationships. It's a bit like, you know, I was going to say a ménage à trois, but maybe you want to cut that out. But but not a great one, really. So you've got this great relationship with the directors. I know them very well. Martin Perry and I are very firm friends now. We've you know, built up a very good friendship over the years, and certainly Paul Barber and some of the other members of the marketing team, Russell. You know, we are very firm friends now. And then you've got this catering company that obviously does great big deals with them and pays millions of pounds to be in there and support them, whatever that is. And then you have to have a separate relationship with them, which is all commercial, financial, trying to make it stack up three ways, really, which is a little trickier. And so when you've got a very good product and it's not made down, you know, huge machines, and you have a sort of blob in the bottom and a couple of bits of meat, if you're lucky, because it's a good quality product and we use good quality ingredients around the UK, it becomes a little trickier to kind of stack those margins up and make it work. So it hasn't always been easy. And I think, you know, I don't think it's any surprise that that's a difficult situation, because commercial deals done in any kind of big situation with catering companies is always tricky. But we have found our way through that, and through determination, and I'm really, to be honest, because I want to keep feeding people good food. At the end of the day, I think there is a room for a market like ours, you know, decent product in football. And I think we've proved that over the last 10 years, having extended across to many clubs across the UK. So people are starting to realise that people will pay for good food. And, you know, you don't want to turn up and spend all this money on a match and not have a great experience. And that includes the food, the drink and everything else that goes with it, really.
Would you say that in what you've done with the Albion, and certainly Harvey's to a certain extent, bearing in mind that, you know, that the arguments that some of the fans had with the club about getting real ale and certain drinks into the stadium and actually good quality products, do you see yourself as a little bit of a kind of a leader in this, in as much as you've got good quality products at a football stadium where previously you'd have had pie companies that we won't mention and drinks that are undrinkable? And that's, you know, the whole notion of the higher quality, the raising the bar of the standards of the foods, has now been set as a standard, more of a standard across the country.
Yeah, I think that's true to say. It's fair to say. I think there was pockets, there was little tiny pockets where Morecambe was doing their own really good thing. I know Morecambe chef's left now, but he was doing his own pies literally on site. And where they're kind of smaller clubs where they were doing it themselves, there was good quality fare available. And there's, you know, one or two clubs where that was the case. But large premiership clubs and large championship clubs, it just hasn't ever been the case. It was always, there's three or four to choose from. They're all pretty much of a muchness. They put them in a hot cabinet and hope they're up to temperature by kickoff. And they taste pretty rank, really. And, you know, we can do better. We've proved we can do better. And yes, I do see us as a leading light in that situation, because what we did at Brighton, taking it from an average 1500 pies, which that was statistical what people were selling, to get it to 10,000 pies at a match was just unheard of. Nobody had ever done anything like that before. So yeah, we did see ourselves as something a little bit quirky and off curveball, and I think we still see ourselves as that today. So people like to kind of pigeonhole food companies into, you're either an artisan company or you're a manufacturer. We don't see ourselves as either of those things. We're chef-led still. And we're a food production company in the middle that does really good quality food, but we happen to do it in high volumes, and we happen to service many clubs around the UK, including Chelsea. We're looking at doing some more work for Wimbledon now, Goodwood Racecourses coming on in the summer. So there's like a much bigger market now for us than we had before, and we've built that very, very carefully over the years. But the same thing applies. You know, there aren't, if there aren't good quality products out there to buy in these kind of areas, then people just carry on buying what they know, and they're just, it's all about price and nothing else. But pound note margins, you know, if people come back and they say, I'm going to have not just one product, I'm going to then buy another pint and another product and then more pints because I've had such a great day, then guess what? You're making more money. And, you know, the margins don't matter because you've smashed it, really, which is, you know, the testament to kind of what Brighton's doing. And you go to other clubs where I've been to, and I won't mention anyone in particular, but, you know, they're kind of, their average sale is £1.50 if they're lucky. And that's because they're just not selling good quality products, you know? Like, they haven't got the Harveys, they haven't got decent products. And that goes for all products. It's not just about what we sell, but it's about whether you do a good burger and whether you're going to buy quality ingredients for that too. And if you're going to sort of, you know, how you're going to serve that. And if you're going to offer a better variety, there's more to offer, and you can do it if you get organized and you have the right equipment and the right attitude, really, to want to do it.
We have to move on to talk about what happened at the Amex last Saturday. It was very weird. Our Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff. I was walking up. I mean, it was for me. I was fortunate enough to be at the game, and it was a very, very strange feeling, really, because having going to these games, you get off the train at Brighton and go round to Falmer, and there's absolutely nothing. That you know, you're a tumbleweed's blowing past the station. There's no one around. There's no atmosphere. No nothing. But on Saturday, I got off at Brighton, and the station was buzzing. I walked out. There was people sitting. Obviously, they can only sit outside the pubs at the moment. But you know, there's people. There's an energy, a vibrancy about it. And then you get to the stadium, and it's just like nothing. But I mean, the things are slowly getting back to normal now, and it was wonderful to see.
The funny thing is that during all this lockdown, every time I've gone to the stadium as part of the press pack, I've driven. So it's not really been part of my usual thing of taking the train and going to the studio and going to the pub or anything like that. So it's been a lot more streamlined. Drive there, park up, you know, you have to do a couple of tests at the gate first, but, you know, attend the game, do a bit of social media. And to be fair, and this is probably where everything has gone wrong, I haven't watched us win every game that we've had at home. That we've won, you've been in attendance, so that's not fair.
Actually that's not strictly true, Al. you did see us win one, but that was a cup game, so that's
fair enough. But the point is that one of the things that we have about home fans about going to football, I suppose any fans going to football, is that you have a routine, and actually, oddly enough, Piglets is part of that routine at the Amex, so you have that routine, but it's been kind of blown to smithereens, whereas with you, it's been part of it. You take the train, you go into Brighton, you then out to Palmer again.
Quite often, I was cycling up to the ground as well on a regular
basis.
But
you haven't broken the routine massively, and that's probably why it feels a bit horrible to you. For me, it's been a different thing. So it's very strange, but not as strange as it could have been.
But I mean, the other thing was, of course, on Saturday, I mean, I did get to the ground, and I couldn't do any social media because we were part of the brilliant blackout, which was well supported by everyone, I think.
Yes, you say brilliant, but I mean, it's a shame that we feel that we've been cornered into doing this. Now, the club actually did give us the heads up on this when we interviewed Paul Barber a few days ago. The abuse on social media must stop. I mean, it's got to the point of ridiculousness. I mean, I've got to be honest with you, when it comes to anyone talking about any Brighton player, I haven't seen any racist or, you know, insulting abuse. You get people who are frustrated about a given player's performance and you want them out of the club, but I haven't really been looking for it. No. But the fact that other people are saying this has happened, this has happened, this has happened, I think has calcified everyone into saying that you've got to do something about it.
Yeah.
Whether this boycott is going to be effective or not, I don't know. But the fact that it's been highlighted, and actually it was quite nice not to have to comment on the Leeds game, but that's not the point.
But well, I would have liked to, and you know what? It was a terrific victory for us. It was nice to do the double over them as well. Ben White came back into the side as well after suspension for Jakub Moda, and it was just, Leeds didn't really offer anything, did they, Joe?
They did not, no. It was good. So my alternative universe over at home, because I can't be at the stadium at the moment, was putting on I bought a Brighton sweatshirt just before kind of lockdown, actually. It was one of like the last games, I think. I can't remember exactly when. And I religiously wear it Obviously, sometimes it's been lucky and sometimes not so much, but it's kind of become part of like, I've got to go and find the sweatshirt, put it on, get myself sorted, got my gin and tonic on Saturday.
Do you panic if you can't find it?
A little, yeah. It's a little like, oh, you know, it is. That's it. I've started to become one of those people that has to wear it now. So
I know the feeling. We've all got a little thing. I mean, you know, if we win a game, I have to make sure I'm wearing exactly the same thing again the week after.
No, I can't do that. The only thing I have is that I don't wear any Albion colours or any Albion flavours unless it's really cold, in which case I'll stick a hat on. Apart from that, on match day, I don't wear any Albion colours at all.
I don't normally, but at home, I felt like, because I've been watching everyone online and the positive parts of online, and I get there have been, we've been subjected to some negative stuff as well. So it is an important topic, but there is also some massive positivity. And I've been watching all these people like with their flags and laying out all their, people have been buying our pies and recreating their own match day. So I feel kind of like obliged to kind of get involved in some of that in a way. It feels like, you know, you need to be doing a little bit of that yourself. So I suppose it's just my nod to, you know, kind of doing the support that everyone else is doing. But yeah, it was an amazing game. It was astonishingly amazing. We could have had more goals, really. I mean, it was just, you know,
who knew?
I know. I was not expecting it, if I'm honest. I was expecting Leeds to give us a real good run for our money. But like you said, they didn't turn up as well as they could have done or play as well as they could have done. But I'm not going to say that, because I'm going to say Brighton turned up, took the game to them and smashed it. So
no, I mean, yeah. Leeds did have an awful lot of corners in the game. I mean, they had 9-1 in the game, which doesn't really tell the story because they didn't do anything with them. And
our defence was strong. Ben White was back in the squad. It really made a difference, I think. I think they've been playing well together with Dunk and obviously having Webster and White at the back. And it was, as people have mentioned before, earlier in the season, you know, the Blue Fortress. And it became the Blue Fortress again on Saturday. And, you know, it was great to watch. Great defence, great attack. Could have had more goals, but the ones we had, happy days, you know. And yeah, we scored the penalty, which is just amazing. So I was kind of, I was like this. Ow!
Yeah, there was
in my mouth thinking, please score the penalty.
There seemed to be a little bit of a question mark about who was going to take it. I mean, I think Dunkey picked up the ball first, but Pascal took it over.
Pascal is the penalty taker when it's like that. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's a certain level of ambivalence, and you think, oh, great, a penalty. What on earth does this mean? I mean, why don't I have the ball on the line and see if we can score from there? But to be fair, he did stick it away beautifully, as he should do. You know, here's how to take a penalty. Smash it into the net. Don't muck about. Don't, you know, all right, you had the Panenka from Mopai even earlier this season, but there is an 8-foot by 24-foot target in front of you. It's only 36 feet away. Put the ball in there. Don't muck about. You know, it's,
and so he did.
And I don't think there could be too much argument over the penalty unless you're at Twickenham. But
it's a silly
challenge, really, wasn't it? But
I think it was more clumsy than silly. I mean, he fell over and his leg, you know, it was almost like a panic of, oh my God, I've fallen over, I can't therefore defend, or whatever it is he was thinking. So
it was a sneaky twist afterwards, though. No, dirty play in my book. No question about it. No question about it. So no, definitely.
No, talking of sneaky twists.
It was a sneaky twist.
Well, I was actually more thinking of sneaky twists is Welbeck's setup for his own goal, for the second goal. That was liquid football.
It was incredible. And, you know, I'm controversial. My youngest is not as much of a fan of Welbeck as I am. But I actually think Welbeck is a great player and I like watching his football. I think it's clever. And it was very clever and just beautiful goal at the end. It was fantastic football on Saturday to watch. And I think it was a lot of clever passing as well. You know, a lot of sort of fast passing going on, which was interesting too. And you haven't seen that all through the season, but Saturday was a real class example of how they are now working more. I think they feel like more of a team working together now than they, I don't know about how you feel about that, but certainly earlier in this sort of year, I didn't feel like it was a, you know, close knit, but they do seem to like be, you know, they seem to be kind of intuitively working out what they need and where they're going to go. And the little flicks and kicks, they're where they need to be, which is great.
I think as a result of that victory there, Joe, you know, we've beaten Leeds 2-0, great result. And it's near as damn it kept us up for the Premier League. Yes, Fulham need a miracle to get out of it, and certainly a need a miracle to overtake us. So let's look at it that, you know, on the wild assumption, because let's face it, following the Albion, anything can happen. But let's look at the wild assumption that we're going to be in the Premier League for another year. But for you personally and for Piglet's Pantry, what does the future hold, especially with your relationship with the Albion, but with football, you know, in a wider sense? What's going to be happening with Piglets in the next few years?
Well, so it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride the last year. We had to completely turn our company round in March last year. And we were very fortunate to have queues of people from the Albion and also the senior management team coming down, buying products from us directly to get us through the first kind of week. And then we turned it around and went online and diversified and became more about afternoon tea market. And we completely changed our whole dynamics in terms of what we do. We have a whole new pastry team now, which does sweet goods as well. So we've got a much stronger bakery offer now than we had before. So our intention is to become the best quality online bakery in the UK. And our online offering is very strong. We've done so well in the last year. It was almost like I feel a bit embarrassed saying we've done well, because it feels like it's been such a tough year for everybody. But we have shared in that journey. We've given, you know, food. We fed the NHS doctors and ambulance drivers when they've been really, really at the peak of the pandemic. And we've consistently given 50% discounts to all of the NHS and continue to do so because we feel they've done such an amazing job. So it's been a real feeling of, I don't know, we're all in this together. And I think certainly locally and nationally, people have supported in big numbers, which has been great. Now they're sort of coming back out of lockdown. It's slightly more tricky because people are getting back out and quite rightly are going out and supporting their local pubs, etc. So that's kind of something we need to be mindful of. And at the same time, events, we don't know what's going to happen. It's slightly an unknown quantity, whether it will continue to be less people in stadiums, will it continue to be a full crowd and we do lateral testing? It's a bit of an unknown quantity, really. So our business plan is hard to write and difficult to follow, I would say. But given the last year and what we've gone through, I think if anyone's going to survive through the next 6 months, it will be us, because we are not ones to sort of sit back and let things happen. We go out there and make it happen. And I think that's our attitude, has been that all the way through the last 10 years. And I don't think it's going to be any different moving forward. To support that, though, and put it back together is going to be tricky. So we're currently in the process of trying to negotiate on a 27,000 square foot bigger building that used to be an old building for another bakery. And we're looking to try and take that on so that we've got the space and capacity to continue to support our big football crowds and our big events market, as well as at the same time as doing the new afternoon tea market that we've created from nothing, really.
We're all out. That's all we got time for this week. So thank you so much, of course, to Joe Hunter, to Alan West. Thank you to Gordon Greer, Elliot Bennett, Adam Ellout and Gary Dicker. I've been Eddie Packham. This has been the Albion Roar in association with oldfootballshirts.com, on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on a podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
You with your masquerading and you always contemplating what to do in case happiness found you. Can't you see that it's all around you? So follow me. Hey, come on, baby. Are you trying? trying to prove it ain't true that your life has kicked you. It's your mind, and that's all that's tricking you. So step in line. Hey, come on.